The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, and it's Friday again already. Amazing. We have an issue that we have been following on this program for years and years, and it is Morgellons. And we're going to take a look at, for all of you who are online and able to watch with us, some pictures tonight in the first 2 hours that are going to literally stun you. They are amazing. You're really not going to believe it, but they're all real and they're all accurately portraying what items are coming out of people's bodies who are afflicted with this non-existent disorder. Remember what the CDC did, which we all predicted, and Cliff Nicholson was the first to do so. To join us this 2 hours tonight, Jan Smith and Cliff Nicholson, two of the strongest advocates for honesty and, well, tell the truth, government, about this issue called Morgellons. Jan and Smith both have Morgellons, and between them probably have had it for well over 30 years now. It's a lifetime affliction. It doesn't go away. And if you're new to this whole subject, stay tuned. You're going to hear some things that will amaze you. In the first hour, Jan and Cliff will be here, and we'll be joined by two special guests who are also Morgellons victims. And they're going to be on to tell their story. And the second one, Elizabeth, who will be on in a half an hour, will also have some photographs that will just amaze you. Your eyes will be, well, pinwheels. I look at them and I'm stunned every time. Let's see if Jan is there. Are you there, young lady?
Yes, I am, Jeff, and thanks for calling me young lady.
Can't lose with that one, right?
No, can't lose.
Well, I'm glad you're feeling better. Jan has been fighting the flu, and she's always fighting Morgellons, and it's really good to hear your voice. Are you feeling okay now?
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good.
All right, well, we'll take it. You're on the program. That's great. And Cliff, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome back. This is Cliff Nicholson, who again is one of the movers and shakers, as is Jan Smith, in a field that unfortunately has some, well, like almost all fields, some hustlers, some frauds, some opportunists, those who trade on the fear of others, talking about cures, selling alleged cures. There is no cure for Morgellons. Let's just put that up front and be done with that. Anything you want to add to that, Jan Smith?
No, not really. As many times as people have told me they've had the cure, that's as many times as I've tried their cure, and here I am with Morgellons. So,
yeah.
I don't know if it's as much of a disease or if it's a genetic change. So, you can't cure genetics if they've messed with them.
Cliff, the idea of people selling cures for this, you and I have talked about this, as have Jan and I, in fact, all three of us for years. These people are the worst, preying on people's fears, uncertainties, and trying to sell them something for a buck. It has always enraged me, and I know you feel the same.
Absolutely reprehensible, and it drives me completely up a wall when I come across it, which unfortunately I do more than I would like to say I do. I just wanted to say a word to the people out there. Whenever you run across somebody that claims to have a cure, immediately the red flags need to go up. It's just not happening.
There are some things, of course, that can afford some slight symptomatic relief, but in every case, the alleged cures have been checked out, tested, and evaluated by people like Jan and Cliff, and there's nothing there. They just don't perform. And unfortunately, we wish we could report to you that, yes, there is something you can do that will greatly mitigate these horrible symptoms, but in our experience, there isn't. And I know some people out there are probably going to be upset that we're telling this this truth. It is a truth, and we're going to tell it. We always have. Jan,
that's absolutely correct.
Okay, Cliff, go ahead.
I was just going to say that's absolutely correct, 100%, and that there are things you can do, and it is important to realize that there are things you can do to ameliorate the condition, to make yourself better, to make the quality of life that you're living better. A lot of that has to do with attitude and with personal regimens.
Oh, yes.
But as far as a straight-out cure, that's not happening, folks.
Jan, have you ever run across anything that, as I mentioned a minute or two ago, that will offer some kind of symptomatic relief, even 10, 20%? People will take it. Is there anything you can recommend?
Well, the one thing that I found that's pretty much tried and true is oregano oil.
Internal or external?
Actually, I'm understanding both. If you put it on the lesions, if they're not open and really sore, oregano oil, if it's a really strong stuff, it can really sting. But internally and externally, those are some of the things that got me through the very worst of times. It's a natural drug. It's a phenol, and it's there's stuff in it called carvacrol, which is really good for people as far as it works like an antibiotic.
What was, Cliff, we did a program after the CDC published its despicable findings that there is no such thing as Morgellons, and went back to their delusional parasitosis crap. Has anything happened since then? What's the fallout in the community been like?
Well, this was generally expected by most people who have been around for a while or have done any kind of research as far as Morgellons goes in long history with the CDC. As you and I both know, this came as no surprise to us, but there was a lot of dismay with some of the people that were clinging to the hope that there would be some decent science come out of this study that the CDC purported to do. Fortunately, a lot of people sort of girded up their loins and knew this was coming, so when it hit, it wasn't as bad of a shock to a lot of us as it would have been.
Thanks to your work and Jan's work, people understood, and it's unfortunate that in every case of human suffering, there are always parasites who want to take advantage. And all we can do is tell folks, Jan and Cliff are as good as they get in this field. There are some other folks who have worked very hard, and we'll maybe mention some other names, but this field is like any other. You've got to be careful. Opportunists and hustlers and hucksters are out there. So, okay, enough said on that. We have two special guests this first hour. They're going to join Jan and Cliff and myself. And Jan, would you like to go ahead and introduce Larry first?
Sure. this is terrible, but I can't even recall Larry's last name at the moment. But
he doesn't have one. It's okay.
Oh, okay.
It's just Larry.
All right. It's Larry. And he's a tremendously intelligent man. And the reason that I had actually suggested to Jeff to have some of these guests on is I'm pretty lucky when it comes to my family and my support system here. And, I count my blessings because I never had to live in poverty or anything else. But there are so many Morgellons sufferers out there who don't have their family support. And, I mean, not only is this disease terrible, but if your whole family decides to turn on you when you have it, it makes your life a living hell. And I can't say more than that. And Larry has been through a lot, and he's a really fine man. And I'm anxious for him to talk to you because he'll open a lot of eyes.
Very good. Okay, Larry, can you hear me all right?
Yes, I can hear you, Jeff.
Good. Welcome to the program. We got you.
Okay, we're glad to be here.
Yeah, and Cliff is here. Say hello, Cliff.
Yeah, hi, Larry. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Cliff. I'm actually one of your followers. You were the first person I came to when I realized what I had. I went to your website.
Well, excellent. We're really glad that you could be on the program.
All right.
Okay.
We're going to go through this break, Brett. Thank you. I'm going to make sure Larry has enough time. Larry, how long have you had this condition? And when did you discover it?
You know, I've had it since 1999, 2000, which would make it going on around 13 years. But I didn't realize what I had until about 2006.
That's what I was after. Okay. You know, there's a point at which you can look back and say, okay, I've had it since X, but when Y hits you and you can actually finally hang a shingle on this thing and say, this is what I've got, there's always a disparity, usually anyway. All right, so you 7 years before you could really nail down a diagnosis.
That's right. That's right. During the time when I knew I was ill around 2000, it kind of came over me with the brain fog and some of the other symptoms. I remember getting a big lesion on my right cheek. However, at that time I was going from doctor to doctor trying to figure out what I had. In the meantime, I was, which I think probably why it took me so long to figure out what I had, I was kind of boiling myself in my hot tub every night because it seemed to make me feel better.
Huh.
And it kind of took off a lot of symptoms. Well, I think what it did was it kind of gave my body kind of a, kind of an artificial temperature raise. It probably killed off a lot of the spirochetes and the kept it from going full blast. When I no longer had access to a hot tub, which was about 2006, is when it came pretty much full blast.
Well, that's interesting. That would suggest, Jan Smith, that heat might play a role in retarding or at least damping some of the overt symptoms down. Have you heard this before?
Yeah, I have, and I've actually experienced that myself with my bath. And using hot bath water seems to be a help. Even though some of the fibers are resistant to heat in general, you know, even flame.
Sure, sure.
Some of the other ones do seem to respond to it.
Oh, that's,
and
that's
I know
interesting.
Before taking a hot shower, I've actually seen movement under my skin for the modal strands themselves to get away. And the modal strands are supposed to be made out of polysaccharide, according to some lab work that was done. And those would have a much lower threshold of melting.
What you just said, of course, is almost science fiction, that these strands in your body know you're going to take a shower in advance. They figure it out, or is it when they get in the water?
As soon as the hot water hits, they start moving.
Oh, wow. Well, that suggests I guess we'd call it Cliff Mickelson, a survival instinct in these things. How weird.
Yeah, we can certainly make a case for this on several different levels. And Jan and I over the years have documented some things that are just actually a number of issues and cases where it's almost a survival response that's immediate. If delayed, it's only briefly. I was going to say about the hot baths that I believe those help too, and I think it's probably because for a number of reasons, the ones mentioned, as well as the fact that it does open up the pores, allow some of the biomass to clean itself off of you, as well as get rid of some of the toxins that are in the body from this affliction.
Mm-hmm.
So the hotter the better sometimes. I've always taken lots of hot baths, and when I haven't, I've noticed it.
Interesting. All right, Larry, good point, and thanks for bringing that out. You mentioned you had a large lesion on your cheek, but before that you said you had experienced brain fog. We need to talk about this, because this is one of the hallmarks of Morgellons. Almost everybody repeats the same thing. How did your brain function change? What was the profile of it that caught your attention?
Well, to give you an example, you know, I had a job at the time working for the government, and which I drove approximately about 3,000 miles a month. And mostly I worked with the federal public defender. And so a lot of my time was spent going to various jails around the Western District of Michigan, including the entire state of Michigan. And quite often I would have to pull over to the side of the road because I'd forget where I was going. And
where you're going?
I would not only forget where I was going, I'd forget who I was. And it came upon me all at once, and I had to pull over, and I had to stop, and several times I even had to pull out my driver's license to see who I was, and I didn't even recognize the name.
Oh my!
And I would have to stay back and kind of meditate for a few minutes or sleep,
quite often I was, the state police would pull over and ask me what I was doing, but I had identification. I'd tell them I was a little bit ill. But I had no idea. Places I had went to hundreds, perhaps thousands of times. And I would forget my way.
That had to scare you.
Yeah, it was scary. It was scary. And at that same time, I was going from doctor to doctor to doctor trying to figure out what I had. I ended up being diagnosed with sleep apnea, going to one of the sleep clinics. And at that time, they had found out I was stopping breathing for like as long as 30 seconds at a time when I would at night, because I would have the feeling when I woke up, I would not be refreshed. I felt it worse than I did when I went to sleep. Also I had the feeling that I knew I had something serious that was life threatening. It kind of hit me one day and I was really ill, and it was on a weekend and I was just beat. The brain fog was in. It was probably 12 o'clock and I'm still laying in bed. It hit me that this could kill me. I was so weak and so disoriented, I could not get out of bed. Now this stuff has about 250 symptoms at the last count. Many of them are very tough symptoms. And the lesion I had stayed on my face, open and wet, for about a year.
That's a classic, and that's actually seemingly staying open a little longer than many of them do.
Well, I've found how to close it up after a couple of years, but in the meantime, I had to use makeup to put over it, which I got pretty adept at because I had to go to work every day.
Oh, sure.
But also, I was getting lesions on my arms and my hands.
These are the typical open, weeping kind of lesions that get a little bit crusty on top?
Yeah, and they would not heal. And so quite often I could not wear wear short sleeve shirts. I had to wear long sleeve shirts, but I even had them on my hands, which I had to even put makeup on my hands to cover it. Because people, when they saw that, they see the lesions on your hand, they had to, it gave the impression that you were using drugs. I was trying to find something to find out what this was. I had no idea what I had. So when people would ask me that, I had no explanation. I didn't know.
Did the brain fog ebb and flow, or did it lock in and stay at a relatively consistent pace in your life? It'll drag you down, of course.
Well, when it first came in, it came in really heavy. I mean, it came in gradually, but it quickly got to the point where it was not only brain fog, I was physically ill. I mean, everything is kind of like having the flu, but this is like super flu. I mean, I was nauseated all the time. I felt like I had to vomit. I didn't know where I was half the time. I had to stop and really focus just to keep doing what I was doing. Fortunately, my job, I'd been doing it for 10 years pretty much a lifetime. So I could do it through the brain fog. Had it been something new, it would have been much more difficult. But the brain fog is it's not the only mental symptom that you get, but it's definitely one of the worst.
Indeed. What are some of the others, Larry?
Oh gosh. The lesions that we talked about. Mm-hmm.
It's all right. Don't worry about it. There are many other things to talk about. In addition to the brain fog, the mental temporary ebbing and flowing mental clouding, you had the traditional lesions. Did you have any idea early on that these lesions were weird? Because as we know them, they don't become infected like a MRSA infection or something like that. They just stay open and they weep. They're sticky and gooey and they don't get infected.
Well, it was not until 2006 when I moved to Las Vegas from Michigan that I really began to experience the worst of it. At one point, I'd say around 2006, 2007, my entire forehead was covered, not with lesions, but with some type of I guess I don't know what else to call it, but biofilm. You know, and this biofilm was, at the time, it went on my forehead, and I have pictures now. I really wish I could have sent some of them to you, but it was like a hard amber. Mm-hmm. And underneath it, mm-hmm. I could see insects. I could see ticks underneath my skin. It was like almost like archaeologists dig up things in the amber. They find bugs. It was right under. You could see it right clearly under my skin. And I just, that really kind of blew me away. And it's just the shock value of some of the things you see when you have Morgell's, make it difficult to deal with. It's the kind of thing you can't mm-hmm. tell anyone mm-hmm. because no one's going to believe it.
Right.
You don't want to show them because it's going to scare them.
Scare the heck out of them. Good, oh, yeah.
Oh, well, it's a good way to get rid of somebody that, is probably
yeah.
annoying. I mean, except I don't know what you have.
It won't work on bill collectors, right? <Yeah.
laughs> No. And those came too after. One thing with this, with Morgellon, you know, since you mentioned that, is as soon as you get it, your social status drops.
I mean, it practically vanishes, yeah. I mean, it depends on how much a person of morality you are. I mean, a lot of people probably don't want to take themselves out of the, quote, scene, even though they know they've got something that's really bad.
But it makes you so you can't work, you know.
Well,
and
I understand.
You can't.
Yeah.
Well, when you can't work, you're. I was married for 26 years. My wife left me. She knew what I had, and I don't think she didn't want to get it herself. She didn't want the children to get it, and neither did I. And since I was in Las Vegas, when I found out what I had, I knew I couldn't come back. Because if I had my whole family, I would have jeopardized my entire family. So I knew then it was over.
I understand. And you lost your marriage, and this is another Morgellon's tragedy.
I lost my job. Mm-hmm. Later on, I had a brother who actually diagnosed me, who lives here in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, he became convinced that I was mentally ill.
Oh,
he thought he accused, you know, me of being lazy and what, and I'm anything but lazy. But, you know, make a long story short, I ended up on the street with
oh
no
my.
Support.
Oh, no. Larry, hold on just a minute. We have to pause. This is another tragedy of a disease, a disorder, a condition, a syndrome that the CDC has slapped all of these people in the face by saying it doesn't exist. We've been through this before, and we'll have to face it again. Larry's story is another heart-wrenching account of this, whatever it is, this monstrous thing that gets into the human body and manifests itself so many different ways. All right, we'll be right back. Okay, and we're back talking to Larry in Las Vegas, who just told us he has literally seen his entire life disintegrate, ending up on the streets. From a disorder, a syndrome, a condition, a disease, if you will, that doesn't exist. This is it's so enraging. I just can't even have really adequate words to express it. Larry, you went on the streets. What happened then? How did you end up on the streets? How did you lose everything? You couldn't work. Did you have the fatigue as well?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I had the fatigue, the brain fog, and lesions while I was out there homeless.
And how many doctors did you go to, Larry, looking for an answer?
Oh gosh, prior to that, I probably went to at least 10, 12 doctors.
And what did any of them have any creativity at all in terms of trying to figure out what the heck you had?
No, they were pretty much, you know, when I told them what I had, they didn't quite get it. I mean, I had, they did what they could. I had MRIs, brain scans, and x-rays and what. But nothing, I mean, I've probably been diagnosed from everything to having brain cancer to, multiple sclerosis, but none of that ever panned out. If I had told them what I had, I think it probably would have been worse. But the fact that I didn't know what I had at the time, I got pretty good treatment. But none of them came to the conclusion of what I had. I was probably tested for AIDS about 15 times, various types of cancer, and nothing panned out.
Well, you're lucky he didn't let him do any exploratory brain surgery, or they would have killed you.
Oh no, you're probably right.
Yeah.
But the whole thing, like I say, I ended up on the street with the brain fog. It was even much more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I did have a bicycle, and which I would take, and you know, I found here the CVS pharmacies here have they had two trash bins, one for cardboard and one for regular garbage, and I could pull my bicycle into the dumpster and sleep on the cardboard, you know. I had a place to sleep for a night, but then, you know, if mm-hmm. you've ever been homeless, which I'm sure most people haven't, there are other people out there are homeless too, and they come looking in those dumpsters. And so it becomes a turf type of thing, you know.
So a lot of people sleep in dumpsters overnight, is what you're saying, and it is first come, first serve, I guess.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
That's right. And then you got some very strange people out there that you have homeless people that try to rob other homeless people.
No, so I can't even imagine.
Oh, well, not only that too. I mean, I remember sitting, by a McDonald's and, when people would drop a change, when they would reach in for their, burgers or whatever, and they'd drop a quarter or 50 cents on the ground.
You'd hear that.
Even a buck or two. I would be struggling trying to run in front of them or trip them so I could get there first and grab the quarter.
Oh.
You know, other than when the McDonald's closed, trying to mm-hmm. get them to give me, those old dried up hamburgers, which they often refuse. You know.
See, now that's something, I'm gonna say something. There should be no starvation or hunger in this country at all. If for no other reason, then there should be a law passed in every state mandating that unused restaurant food be made available to the homeless. And the homeless can sign a waiver. That would be fine, that they won't hold the fast food place, for example. If there's any problem, they won't hold them responsible. They'll just eat. There's so much food thrown away, it is astounding.
Oh, and not only that, when they were taking the food out, big bags of French fries and burgers, and you stop them, they refused to give it to you, and they had they put it in where you couldn't get it.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
So it was, which made it even worse. I did find, when I was at one of the places, I found a lady who was taking food out and leaving it for another homeless person. And, she would even leave beer and different candy and foods and what. And mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just managed to get there first. And she would try to keep me off, but then I'd sit back and watch, and I watched this other homeless guy come and take his food. And so we got to fighting over that. I mean, it's, I never thought in my entire life it mm-hmm. would be reduced. I just had no clue.
Well, you hit the bottom.
No clue.
You hit the bottom, yeah. and you were ailing terribly. It doesn't get any worse.
I was even terrible to look at. I had lesions on my face. When people looked at me, they didn't mm-hmm. want me around. It was,
So you were a pariah in the homeless community.
Yeah, and I'm approximately 5'10". At one time I was as much as 162 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
At that time I was about 130 pounds at the most.
With lesions. You look like a zombie.
Yeah, I did. It was bad. I looked bad. I probably smelled bad. And, it was a tough way to go. You know, this disease is a tough way to go. Even when you get beyond that, eventually I did get my disability, which I had applied for here in Las Vegas, and I got it within 6 months. But in the meantime, I was, you know, had to wait. And
Go ahead.
Oh no, I just might add. When I applied for disability, I applied for Morgellons, and that's what I got my disability for.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Cliff and Jan, the government is giving disability for a disorder, a syndrome, a condition that doesn't exist?
That's a new one for me. Interesting.
This was back in 2006, 2007. Now they're making it much more difficult. Now, when I applied, they gave me 3 pages to fill out of why I needed disability. And I would actually go in the office with my lesions, and they could see that I was sick. they could see the lesions on my, well, I think one of the reasons they gave it to me because they didn't want me coming back there. But when I filled out the papers,
they probably had some discretionary, they had some discretionary powers too, which is a good thing. You find some good people in some of these offices and they have that discretionary power.
Oh yeah. And I think that's what happened. And, they gave me 3 pages to fill out. I gave them 25 pages, photos and pictures back. And I got mine the first time. I think part of it was because they didn't want to see me again.
Right.
And I needed it. I mean, it was no question.
Right.
But they,
okay.
Even then they treated me, you know, that's another story there. That's a whole other, but I did get it.
All
now
right.
They're making it much more difficult.
Well, now they've got a disorder that they can't look to and hang a sign on anymore. So that's even tougher for folks. Hi, Jan, we're going to go through this break, Brett. We're going to get as much time as we can with these folks. How often are people with Morgellons put on disability? Does it happen? This is the first I've heard of it. I mean, they are disabled, but to qualify for the federal disability is not easy.
They seem to be speaking out of both sides of their mouth because on the one hand, we don't exist, and on the other hand, they say disability. And when we come back, if we're having a break...
No, we're not. We're going to go ahead.
Oh, okay. Larry has something really interesting to tell you about his encounter with the CDC in a hospital. I found it very fascinating and very...
Right.
A lot of hypocrisy there, too.
Larry, let's please hear that story.
Yeah, well, this way. Make a long story short, I ended up in the emergency room in a hospital in Summerlin. Here in Las Vegas, and I, you know, at that time I was very adamant. I told the emergency room doctor what I had, and me and him got into a big shouting argument, and we were just, you know, cursing back and forth, and he even said, well, I remember the last thing he said to me, well, even if you have Morgellons, there's no cure for it. And so I said, okay, well, you call the CDC. And all of a sudden that was like the magic words. And I didn't know, and I used this later on to my advantage, but they had to call the CDC. The next thing, they usher me into an orange room. It's almost like out of E.T. You know, when they found E.T., they come in with the orange outfits, and all of a sudden it was like I was from another planet.
Hazmat suits.
The nurse
suits.
Put on these.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she came in with an oxygen tank. And they had a social worker come in, which was the most interesting. And she told me, she said, they did call the CDC. And right now, she told me they have 18 pages and it's still coming in on how to treat me.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, part of it was to quarantine me, you know, because I'm in a room all by myself where before they had me in the hall lined up with all these other people.
Well,
and
that suggests somewhere, Cliff Mickelson, that the CDC suspects that Morgellons is highly communicable.
Oh, absolutely. There's somebody there that knows exactly what's going on. And this isn't the first time I've heard this particular situation having occurred. I believe even Jan had something like that happen to her in one of her many trips for her knee surgery to the hospital. But I have heard other instances where all of a sudden, boom, the right word is said or the right call is made, and that particular person is suddenly put into isolation.
Wow. Okay, Larry, go ahead. So the data was coming in. You were locked up in a high-security kind of a treatment room.
Yeah, and to make a long story short, when I went back later to get the records, they would not give them to me. They refused, and they used the HIPAA guidelines not to give me, because I wanted that CDC report. And I know it was 18, 24 pages or so, but they refused to give it to me. At some point, I think I'm going to have to get a lawyer and subpoena that. But
we'd all like to see those pages.
Well, the same thing happened when I lived in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Same thing. I used the CDC thing, and I realized then they have to call, and they do call, and I got a fax. As a matter of fact, even before then, I would like to add, at the time, the CDC had a director or a public relations director by the name of Dan Roots, R-U-T-Z. This was after I got off the street, but me and a girl I was with at the time, we called the CDC. He promised me that he acknowledged Morgellons, and he promised me that they would have a protocol within 6 months.
Never happened. How interesting.
Yeah. And I called him once a month until, you know, and I kept calling him, and until he refused to call me back. And, you know, the rest, they never came up. Now they've changed directors, public relations directors, but I had talked with him several times. He even talked with the girl I was with at the time, and which she also had, because she got it from me. And this was before I knew what I even had, kind of, to make a long story short.
All right, so there's one direct communication of the disease from human to human. Okay.
No. Oh, no, this is, I can tell you, it can be sexually transmitted. No question about it.
Sure.
And particularly when you're in the early phases where it's much more difficult. You know, as you get on later and you treat yourself, it becomes less transmissible. But it is definitely sexually transmissible.
And I'm sure transmissible other ways as well. Sharing eating utensils, drinking out of the same bottle or glass, anything like that is potentially a vector.
Even going back to it now, to tell you how I got Morgellons, this was back, oh gosh, it was around 1999. My family, we went to Omaha, Nebraska. We were going through, I think we're coming out to Las Vegas because all my relatives had lived here. And we stopped in Omaha, Nebraska, going to the zoo. On the way into the zoo, a low flying flock of birds flew over my head. That's going in. One of them, let's say, defecated on my head. That's how I got it. As soon as I got in the zoo, I washed my hair and what, but after we got back from Las Vegas, I had this drilling sensation up in the right hand top of my scalp. And it went on and on and on. It was drilling, and it felt like something was just drilling into my scalp, something very tiny. I would have my wife and my family. I'd say, at the time, I had a lot of hair. At the time, I had hair. And they would part and look back.
Uh-huh.
None of them said anything about a bullseye rash or anything.
Sure.
But that drilling went on and on for about 6 months. And the more it drilled, the more my immune system, it weakened to the point where I would get bit, let's say, in the backyard by a mosquito. 2-3 weeks later, the whelp was still there and it was still itching like I had been bit 15 minutes before.
Wow.
Happening is the more that thing drilled, the more my immune system broke down. At the time, I was running. Me and my wife, we were running 3 miles a day, and I was running in marathons. I was at the top of my physical, I was probably in the best shape of my life when I got this. You don't have to have a weakened immune system to get this. This will weaken your immune system, and it broke my immune system down. And not only that, it made it so, I remember we'd still have, like picnics with neighbors and friends, and people would come around, and I had a reputation for attracting bugs. If there was one mosquito in the backyard, it became attracted to me. I got bit by it. Yeah, I remember my ex-wife even saying, bugs like Larry, and they did. It was like somehow bugs became attracted to me, and later on they became even more attracted.
A lot of it has to do with your breath and the amount of CO2 you're emitting, and other things. I'm sure that insects, especially flying insects, can pick up.
Well, there's something about this, Jeff, too, that sends off a signal that your body is dead. It somehow you attract things like fungus gnats. Coffin flies, and you know what I mean by coffin flies.
Those are absolutely that cover carcasses and dead animals, roadkill,
right.
You name it.
Oh, you know, there are a lot in funeral homes and mortuaries where dead people are at. They're pretty much overrun by coffin flies.
Those things,
they were in my house. They were after me. They were in my house. I don't know how I attracted them or why I created them. I think it's hard to say. But I did have also other things coming from my body that, like, how can I put this? Insects. Yeah, insects. And they had to be coming from me. And you know, I don't know if you've heard, I'm sure you've heard about the black specks.
Yeah, sure.
And the buzz balls.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up in a house where a guy who I'd rented a room from, it was in foreclosure, as many houses here in Las Vegas. And he walked away, and he told me if I wanted to stay there, I had to put the electricity and all that in my name.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the next day, the lights went out, and I ended up doing that. I'm there by myself in this, mm-hmm. this big, huge $350,000 house. And I remember I was in the main bedroom, and all of a sudden I was walking around, and my feet, I started getting bit from the carpet. And I said, what is that? And it would bite really hard, but I couldn't see anything. And then later, when I would put my clothing on, my clothing would start to bite me. And I was like, what is it? And then I started seeing these, like, colored fuzz balls in the corners of the walls. Make a long story short, shortly after, and this all happened within a two-week period, my entire feet, the bottom of my feet, were black with these black specks. I mean, totally black. They had covered, it was like some type of bug. I don't know how to describe them. I no longer have them now, but at the mm-hmm. time they were just, mm-hmm. and I could feel them moving on my feet. And not only were they moving on my feet, they began later to, started to attack me. When I would walk around the house, they would dive by me. When I tried to eat, they would jump on my plate. When I tried to sleep, I'd open my eyes and there they were in the bed creeping toward me. They were even outside my house. They were in my shoes. They were on my motorcycle under the seat. Even outside, they would attack. I still today, I have, that was, those were really hard times. Really hard times. And people,
yeah.
How can I put it? I mean, there's a lot of theories about Morgellons, and the mystery of Morgellons, but the mystery of Morgellons is why are they trying to hide it? You know, this
of course,
is a real,
yeah. That's the big question. Yeah,
that's the mystery of Morgellons. It's a horrible disease. And anyone who has it, regardless of how they think they came about, they realize it's some type of high tech, it's not a normal thing. To quote you, Jeff, it didn't come out of nature. It doesn't feel like it came out of nature.
Exactly.
This stuff has man-made written all over it.
Literally, we've found some with numbers, some of the objects. This is a classic story of a great tragedy, but ultimately the triumph of the human will. You have as much as one can defeated this. You've held it at bay. You've overcome things that would have driven a lot of people to suicide. And Morgellon suicides are not uncommon, I understand. We've talked about that for years.
Well, it drove me there too, you know, except I wasn't very good at it. If I had it, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation, but yeah, I tried it. I just wasn't successful. Even after 150 muscle relaxers, and I've been unconscious for a week in a boxed off rest stop in California. And it wasn't something I done out of desperation. It was just something I saw my quality of life was draining. And I just made a conscious decision. I had a life insurance policy. I wanted to take care of my children, and it didn't work. I ended up, make a long story short, I ended up in a, by my own choice, going into facility, a mental health facility.
Mm-hmm.
At the same point, I tried to also get the CD records. They refused to give it to me. But make a long story short, I ended up having to go to court to get out of the facility. Because, I don't know, I forget me anything about my past, but I was at one time I started off my career as a Detroit police officer. And they'd asked me if I had guns, and yeah, I did, and I do. And they refused to let me out. So I had to go to court, and the judge, they ended up giving me a public defender who did their research, and they did, and the judge let me out by the fact that he said he acknowledged the existence of Morgellons, and he said that this was a medical problem, not a psychiatric problem, and he let me out as a result of that.
Wow.
But
well,
yeah.
Larry,
yeah,
but we're just about out of time here. Jan, we could talk to Larry for two more hours easily.
Oh, easy.
And yeah. Follow this. I think we're going to have to do a part two with Larry. We've got another special guest that we're running late to have on the program. Larry, I want to hear the rest of your story. Would you come back?
Oh, you bet. You bet.
Maybe and next week, the week after, but I'd like to have you come back and tell people how you got out of this incredible bottomless pit of despair and anguish. That's unbelievable what you have accomplished. So let me just right now thank you for being here, and I salute you, and a lot of people listening are probably just staggered at what they've just heard. We'll talk soon.
Oh, no, I'd love to.
All right.
I'd love to come back. Thank
we'll
you.
Do
yep,
it, Larry.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
That hour went awfully fast, Jan Smith, and that is a story. That is a story. I mean, all Morgellons people have stories, and that's no exception, but that one seemed particularly intense.
Yeah, it did. And you know, I know, you know, many other people that have stories that almost rival Larry's. It's amazing how high the numbers are for people that, you know, have lost families and have all these other peripheral things happening to them. It's like somebody kicking you when you're down. You know, you're as sick as you've ever been in your whole life, and the world just turns its back on you and, you know, spits on you. It happens to a lot of people. I'm just grateful, you know, that my family was the way they are. So I count my blessings, I'll tell you.
Indeed. Cliff, anything to add quickly? We've got to take our top of the hour break, then we'll come back with hour number two.
Well, just that I think someone somewhere knows exactly what this thing is all about. It's none of it's a mistake. None of it's happening by accident, but there is definitely an effort to keep it under the covers. There was a period of time that when, for instance, Larry was talking about, where things were kind of starting to break loose a few years back, but right before that CDC study got started. And I really strongly suspect that somehow behind the scenes, that entire thing was maneuvered to put the hammer back down on this whole thing, because somebody has something to hide out there.
Somebody's got something very big to hide out there. Huge. Back in just a minute. Hold on, gang. Hour number two with Jan Smith and Cliff Mickelson. Lots of pictures to look at just ahead as well. Okay, welcome back. Hour number two. We're obviously not going to have nearly enough time to do this properly, so we're going to schedule another program to follow this one up and finish what we're going to try to do tonight. We'll do our best. But I wanted Larry to have ample opportunity to share with us the nightmare he has been through. We'll talk to him again. I want to hear how he managed to get past the suicide attempt and recover to the extent that he's functional and able to speak on a program like this. This is another story from the Morgellons community of an heroic individual, literally overcoming inhuman odds. Just unbelievable. And we've heard these. How many programs have we done, Jan and Cliff? 30, 40? I don't know.
Quite a few.
Yeah.
And you know, Larry's story is so typical and so tragic. So typical. There's hundreds and thousands of these kinds of stories out there. And it's just mind-boggling.
Well, you know, I honestly felt a little tongue-tied last hour. Every time I hear a story like this, I have emotions that race through me of anger, of outrage, of course, great sympathy, and wanting to help in any way I can the victim. But the government, this alleged government, what it has done is unforgivable forever and ever. It's just not something that can be tolerated.
It will never be the same in the eyes of all of us, of course, and most of us here don't have any illusions, but a lot of other people, I think, have come to that conclusion. Thousands and thousands of people who normally would go through their lives accepting what they're told, accepting the way things are, accepting what the government says to them, putting their faith and their trust in their government organizations. And maybe it's a good thing in some way, but that trust has certainly been disabused
blatantly for those who suffer from this affliction.
I am staggered, Jan, when I hear stories like that. I don't care how many I hear, and I feel like this is almost like the first time I've heard one, but I've heard scores of them, and they're all similar. They're horrific. And what you go through, and your appearance tonight, and Clips, is just another testimonial to two more incredibly difficult, unbelievably difficult challenges to stay alive.
That's true, and I know before this program was done, I asked you to have Larry and Elizabeth on because they're kind of the unseen people. I mean, as I said before, considering everything in my life, I feel pretty lucky in spite of it all. And I'm more upbeat than a lot of people are because I can afford to be because, you know, having family support is everything with this disease. But when you think about the people that love you just turning on you and ostracizing you, it's heartbreaking.
Well, it really hit me. The way Larry explained it, and others have, and it does every time, to have everything and then to lose everything. It just amazes me. How common is suicide among the Morgellons community that we know about, Cliff? Now, there are a lot of people who have it. It's never diagnosed, and they just check out.
Right, exactly. And that's, I think, the million-dollar question. How many of them out there have occurred that we don't really know, that we can't factor into the statistics? There's plenty. There's plenty of them out there. And it's like Jan was saying, you know, some of us are more fortunate than others. We have the support group or we have something within us that pulls us through. But there are so many people out there, so many people, Jeff, who they have stories. They were on top of the world and they've lost everything. They go down and they don't come back. They don't come back. Larry has something that he's blessed with, something that he's come back. But I know people, Jeff, personally know people who have never come back. Some of them have died. Some of them, I don't know anyone who's committed suicide, but there are a number of them out there, you know, that, that I'm aware of.
Well, you and Jan are feel like a part of my radio family, and I just am always grateful to what you do on this program to try to help the world understand what's going on. How many continents now, Jan, is this Morgellons syndrome present on that we know about? All of them, isn't it?
Pretty much. I don't hear a whole lot about China, but the rest of it, I mean, people from New Zealand.
It's a worldwide problem.
Europe. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Now, if you can go to the homepage, all of you folks out there, look at guests. And please look under Jan and Cliff and look for Elizabeth's pictures or Elizabeth's photos and load that page up. And with that said, let's welcome Elizabeth to the program. Elizabeth, thank you for being here tonight and thanks for your patience.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here and hopefully shed a little more light on this syndrome.
Well, it's something that you could never shed too much light on this, and after the betrayal by the CDC, we have to redouble our efforts. It's really on us now to do it. I don't have this disorder, thank God, but I feel almost like I'm part of the Morgellons community, and it just enrages me.
It's pretty hard to accept that this is a reality. For me, I've never looked for conspiracies and things before, but you can't be living with this and not understand that there's some kind of a huge cover-up going on. It's
huge.
Just impossible not to believe that,
and
the things that happen to us are just unconscionable. It is like living in a nightmare, and the reason that I'm on here talking tonight is because I've talked on a couple of small shows that had people who were like Randy Wymore and some of the other people on, and they'll talk about, well, you have a few fibers coming out of your skin, but, you know, that's not what this is all about. This is a syndrome that encompasses so many different things. It's bacterial and fungal and viral and bio nano. It's just unbelievable. And when you think about all of these things going on in the body, you do have to question, how did this just occur through nature?
Well, it didn't.
No, it didn't.
There's no way.
But the thing I want to say is that there are so many families, little children, animals, whole families that are suffering, and they can't even get help. No one will even give them what they need. No one will even give them sympathy or empathy. If you know, I had cancer before. I had a very bad bout with cancer. And mm-hmm. one of the things that it was difficult going through, because they said I wouldn't live, but I did. But
how dare they tell any patient that?
I know. They told my family to make my funeral arrangements. And
this is so disgusting.
And I was 35 years old at the time, so it was really amazing. But during that period of time, one of the things that was so great was that people were so supportive of me. They came to see me. They brought dinners to my family. They supported me in every way they could.
Yes.
You know, you just receive this outpouring of good wishes. And you know, that with prayers and everything, I got through it. I made it through. I was determined I was going to make it through, and I did. When you go through this, you're living in this nightmare, really, truly a nightmare, and things don't make sense to you, and you actually feel crazy because mm-hmm. you think this couldn't be happening. This isn't real. You can have your skin itches and you feel stuff crawling on you, and you
right.
have strings moving on your body, and
right.
You were asking about symptoms. I have my head shaved because my head was so eaten away from these lesions. They ate the whole back of my head out to where I had an aneurysm.
What?
This stuff, yes, it ate the back of my head out. The scalp out, and then I had an aneurysm and almost bled to death from that. You know, the seriousness of this illness that I have is unbelievable. The pain that I have from it, I nearly pass out from the pain some nights. I have tube-like things. One of the pictures is a picture of one of the tube-like shapes that came from out of my skin. I have tube-like things that are growing in my body. It feels like somebody's got a screwdriver pressing into me. It's just unbelievable. And there are different stages that people have this. They
yes.
They can
yes.
have no lesions at all, no sores. Mine are like big open wounds. But people, you know, some people don't have any lesions at all. But even though they don't, there are all these other things going on inside the body. It's not a skin disease, you know.
It's systemic.
Whole syndrome. It's a systemic. It affects your joints and your muscles. It's in every single part of your body.
See,
every single part.
We've talked about that for the entirety of our programming on this subject, the beginning
yes.
of it. We talked about this can't just be in the skin.
It may be
an issue of the skin manifesting. Lesions and fibers could be an end stage, as it were, of the mass infection of the entire body, the organism.
Yes.
It shows up, the body's trying to get rid of these things, or they're trying to find a way out, or whatever. But we don't think that the skin, the manifestations in the skin, are in fact the first stage of infection. Do you agree or disagree with that?
Oh, definitely, definitely. I agree with you. It's there are all different parts to it.
Yes.
And they all work in conjunction with one another. And I think ultimately it will kill us. It's, you know, it.
And yet we still have no autopsy,
right.
no honest autopsy.
No.
Of a known Morgellons fatality that I know of.
I know people who have died from it, but no one has. In fact, the last woman I knew that passed away had already asked for an autopsy to be done, and they said they waited too long to get it there. There's always an excuse that
always.
They don't get the autopsy done.
And then they
yes.
cremate the remains, and that's it.
Yeah. But I want to just say, before I say anything else, is for
Please.
The people out there who think they have this, I'm pretty sure they have this, and they're suffering with all these things because it takes all day to take care of your body and all day to deal with it. You don't sleep. You go for days without sleeping. Not sleeping is part of it. Please don't give up. We are going to overcome this. We are going to find the answers, and we're going to overcome it. So please, if you're out there, don't give up. Try to find someone else that you can talk to that has it, and that helps so much, you know, me being able to talk to Jan and Larry, and that's really just, you know, that's like become my family.
Yeah, of
because
course.
My family, who I was so close to, that is not there anymore in terms of being a support system for me.
They're gone too.
Well, you know, I had my son and his wife had a child. He's three now. And, of course, I don't go around people. I mean, I don't have them come in my house. You're very isolated with this if you're trying to protect people, because we don't know whether we can make people sick.
Well, that's one of the prime directives, isn't it, of this having this horror?
Yes.
To protect
yes.
others from getting it?
Yes. And, you know, I'm a people person. I was a human services counselor before, and I'm a people person. I love to be around people. I can't have my friends come to my house. I can't have my family come and stay with me, because I don't know what I'm exposing them to or if they will catch it from the stuff coming off of my body. So when my grandson was born, I never got to touch him. I didn't even go around him for a long time. And then when I did go around him, I wouldn't get near. I would never touch him, never kiss him. You know, he's 3 years old now, and I've never held him in my arms or kissed him or anything. And, you know, he always asks me, he says, "Grandma, why do you wear a hat?" He's big enough now to ask these questions, you know, because I have a hat on all the time. I shaved my head 3 years ago and haven't been able to grow my hair back, because sores happen when I try to grow my hair back.
So it got into your hair follicles.
Yes, it was all over my head, and especially the back of my head turned completely red, like it had been burned. In fact, at that time I was in Washington State, and Washington University's head dermatology person said that he had called in the burn unit, and they said the back of my head had the equivalent of third-degree burns. And that's just from this doing it to my head. And yet at the same time, they met with me after they took films of me. They took films of my body to show the things that were growing under
the
skin.
So they videotaped and they did some real work
on
you.
They did do that. And they found all of my biopsies showed that I had plant material in my skin. Plant material was what the biopsy showed. But the ironical thing is they had a psychiatrist come in and they said, "Now, you know, we want you to talk to this psychiatrist, and we'd suggest that you go and see someone because we think you might have some mental illness issues." And I'm thinking to myself, how do you look at my head? It's third-degree burns.
How do you keep from punching him in the nose?
This is so
stupid.
And then, you know, what else is even crazier is I'm so frustrated at this point. I can't even have my head touch my pillow. It's just, it's excruciating. And I've had this phone call that comes in to me, and it's from a doctor I've never heard of. And she's calling me at home, and she tells me that this doctor from the University of Washington, the head person there, told her to call me because I had Morgellons and that she was treating other Morgellons patients. So here he was covering himself at the university, saying, you know, she's probably got a psychiatric disorder.
But
He wrote letters to my rheumatologist, my endocrinologist, all of my primary care. He wrote letters to all my doctors saying I needed to seek psychiatric attention, yet he called this other doctor and told her she has Morgellons and you're treating people with that. Would you help her?
There's an underground developing then.
Oh, definitely. And that was Bastyr Medical Center, if you're familiar with them. Mm-hmm. Bastyr Medical Center, I went to see that doctor, and she did treat me and treated me for Lyme as well.
She took the Morgellons seriously. Did you find or did you feel that her knowledge of Morgellons was substantial? Did she have a good, handle on it?
She was just learning about it.
Uh-huh.
But she'd had enough people come in who did have problems that she was at least open-minded enough to say, "Hey, there's people coming in with the same symptoms. They're saying this is what they have." And
and
she wrote it. She gave me a diagnosis of it. So that was interesting. I know that I worked with a lot of Boeing people and a lot of Microsoft people, and I had a lot of people from the Boeing plant, which was out in Everett, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of people out there that I found out seemed like all been exposed to this. There was like a whole complete, one of the women I knew that worked out there said something strange happened, and that there was at least probably 40 people that worked on this one shift who all had this.
Really?
So, yes, which is really strange, but that's what she told me.
Oh, that is, you know...
Isn't that weird?
Very. Hold on, Elizabeth. Let me go back to Jan and Cliff just for a minute here. Back in the beginning, when we first began to do these programs, Jan and Cliff, there weren't instances that I recall of anything like Elizabeth just reported to us. A big cluster at a major mm-hmm. defense plant comes down with it. We had isolated cases. We had, I remember the one nurse we had on, and she said that, yeah, I could tell other nurses on my shift, a couple of them had it because they wore long sleeves in warm weather like I did.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to hide their lesions so they wouldn't be laid off or otherwise ostracized, punished, or whatever.
Right.
So this seems to be, as Cliff projected long ago, spreading through every level of society. It's not going away.
No.
No, and it's not going to either.
Now, when we, you folks are going to hear us at some point tonight, probably talk about nano array, nanofiber. Now, don't make the mistake of thinking we don't understand what nano means. Nano is too small to be seen, period. What we are alluding to as the apparent end result of what we suspect might be a nano factor in the beginning manifestation of this disease or these particular items that are being pulled out of people's skin. There's a nano base to it. And it grows from that. So that's what we're talking about. Okay, back to Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a bunch of pictures here, Elizabeth, that you were kind enough to share. And hopefully most folks have been able to load them up. Go to the guests section. Look for Elizabeth's samples. And please click on that and let that page load. And we'll take a look at those in just a couple of minutes. So you'll see a large, amazing blue sphere at the top, and that'll be Elizabeth's Morgellons samples. Now, I want to do one thing here. In January, when what was the date, Cliff? January something, the CDC report? Can't remember.
Yeah, it was the final thing. It was in early January.
All right, okay. Here's the report. I just pulled it up. This is the final paragraph. Now, remember, this is after years of the CDC working with Kaiser Permanente in Northern California, simply wasting time and covering up the existence of this rapidly escalating problem. And we have a lot of different words for it. Here's the final paragraph. This comprehensive study of an unexplained apparent dermopathy demonstrated no infectious cause and no evidence of an environmental link. There was no indication that it would be helpful to perform any additional testing for infectious diseases as a potential cause. Future efforts should focus on helping patients reduce their symptoms through careful attention to treatment of coexisting medical, including psychiatric conditions that might be contributing to their symptoms. Now, just if you're new to this and you've heard Larry and you've heard Elizabeth and a little bit from Jan and Cliff tonight, do you see what the CDC did to these people? They just destroyed them with this. Now, that isn't to say that the Morgellons community is destroyed, but many hoped just for some validation, some vindication. Throw us a breadcrumb. The CDC gave them nothing but an insult and went back to this delusional parasitosis diagnosis. I can think of nothing more horrifying than what the CDC did to the Morgellons community. And we've talked about that on this program before as well. We've got to take a break here. A comment, Jan, before we roll into the break?
They're just trying to make us go away because they know what they've done. And it's so horrible that if the world really believed this, they'd be in big trouble.
That's a very good point. Cliff?
Those words that you read, Jeff, should serve as the indictment that sends those people to prison.
Or worse. Or better.
Hey,
depends on how you look at it.
Jeff, you know, we depended on that so much because we wanted to be able to say to our families, we can hug and kiss you. We can have you be around us.
Exactly.
And
exactly
so they kept us isolated. But I want to just say one thing about it took the CDC. It took the CDC 10 years to pass research for Magellan's to Kaiser Permanente. It took 4 years of research during that time. It was in the U.S. Armed Forces Institute of Pathology. And I kept the paperwork. It was listed under bioterrorism and enteric diseases.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And that's kind of interesting, the category they put it in.
See, this is just a grotesque lie.
It was a mockery.
Absolutely.
A mockery to all of us.
Yep, yep. All right, we'll take a break and come back and look at Elizabeth's photographs here, and you're going to be amazed, so please load the page, and we'll come right back. Okay, we're back, and let me read a little bit more from this CDC outrage. Brett, I get a pretty big echo here. I'm not sure where it's coming from, but maybe thank you. While I read this anyway. Results of the study published in blah, 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 blah show this condition appears to be uncommon among a population representative of Northern California residents. Skin damage from the sun was the most common skin abnormality found, and no single underlying medical condition or infectious source was identified. Upon thorough analysis, most sores, skin lesions, appeared to result from chronic scratching and picking without an underlying cause. The materials and fibers obtained from the skin biopsy specimens were mostly cellulose, compatible with cotton fibers. If the CDC tried to concoct a more outrageous lie than that paragraph, I don't know that they could. They've certainly equaled it on a number of occasions. It doesn't get any more disgusting than that. Elizabeth, will you take us on a little tour of the photographs that you made available for us, please?
Oh, sure. I'll be happy to.
Can you see them on your computer right now?
I can. I've got them up. Let me just get to the top. Yeah, the first one, there are three balls that are under the blue ball that you see at the top, which was an article that I found online about tissue growth. And when I saw that, I was flabbergasted because I had another ball that was just a single green ball. The one below, I had another one that was a single ball by itself that looked even more like the one above. And I said, my God, that's what looks like the things that are coming out of me. So this is a cluster of three. They were all, like, glued together with some kind of a gooey substance, and they came out like that with the three together. And then I had another one that came out separately the day before that was a little bit larger than these, and it was just a big green ball and had the same hole in it like these.
How do you collect the things that come out of your body, and how do you magnify them and then take pictures of them like this?
This is big enough to see. You don't have to have it under a microscope or anything.
Oh, really?
It's big enough to see. It's like the three of them together take up a space about, I know everybody's little fingernail is a different size, but a lady-sized fingernail, a little fingernail, it's like about half the size of the fingernail on my little finger, so...
That's
big.
Let me
see if I can measure it and tell you.
Yeah.
Let me look at my
Well, you're talking
here.
About...
It's about half a centimeter wide, these three together.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're looking at Elizabeth Morgellon's samples. Go to guests@rents.com and pull up the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so those three together will just about span the width of your little fingernail.
Yeah, it's about a half a centimeter wide.
Where did the green one come out of?
The hip. It came out of my hip. I have a hip that's been open like a big, huge open hole pit, whatever you want to call it, for about 5 years now.
And these things just show up and come out, and you grab them with tweezers or whatever.
I have to take them with my fingernails. I can't behind you. You can't work too well with tweezers, so.
Understand.
I have to get them with my fingernails, but okay. I have all kinds of things that come out of there. It's like I'm a factory for I'm producing all kinds of strange.
Well, I tell you, if you're anywhere near Jan Smith, she has produced so many things.
I know she has.
It's a major motion picture.
Yes, definitely. And
all right, so
yes,
this green, this,
so,
this
yeah, they're the things that come out of me are not real tiny. They're always macro. I actually have taken a lot of my photographs with a regular camera. But they're always very large.
Now, Jan, that's an unusual profile, isn't it? To have something manifest at this large size stage so often?
Elizabeth has had this a real long time, longer than I have even, and it just seems like over the years it's become more complex and larger on her body. So whatever it is that this stuff feeds off of, she must have the perfect genetics for this to have all of this stuff going on.
Wow, see, listen to Elizabeth laugh. That's just as amazing to me that people with this can laugh at all. Look at the blue item and look at the green item. The green one has a hole in it, yes?
Yes.
So that would suggest that there was something in there that came out.
Yeah, I tried to take on the bigger one I had. I couldn't actually, I had pictures of the bigger singular one, but I actually tried to take different camera views of it to see what was in there, but it shimmers. It's very hard to get a picture of what is in that inside goo, but it's very shimmery.
Could be a million, I don't want to say eggs, but who knows?
I don't know.
This is science fiction. That is not a piece of material from a sweater or something like that.
No,
it's
it
not
isn't.
Clothing.
I thought it looked like styrofoam. It almost looks like styrofoam, the outside of it. But I'm sure it's not.
Well, I agree. All right, now, the next one, the next picture is going to really knock a lot of you folks over.
Yeah,
it knocked me over when I saw it.
Too. Yeah.
All right, now this is a piece of what Jan Smith would call plaque. It's a crusty kind of surface that these lesions accrue or manifest, and you pulled that off. How big is this piece?
About the same. A little bit bigger than that. I'd say that was about probably 1 centimeter.
A fingernail in width, easy.
Yeah, easy.
All right. Okay,
yeah.
So you're just peeling off pieces of plaque from the top of this lesion, and you peeled this one off.
Yes.
And what? How did the look? Now look at that, folks. Look at that piece of stuff that came out of her body that formed on the top of this open lesion on her hip. How did that catch your eye? You might have missed that and just thrown it in the trash.
Yeah, I kind of look at everything now because, you know, this one has some type of numbers on it. But I have other samples that are from deep inside that they have writing on them too, but they're not this embossed and raised writing. They are writings on the sample. They look like someone has marked them with black ink, and they actually have numbers and letters together. One of my samples actually has NASA written on it. But I didn't send those in to you because they're not that easy to see. They're rather difficult to view. This is very easy to see.
Right.
The other ones are, if I could get somebody to clear the picture up a little bit more, you might be able to see them.
Well,
definitely letters and numbers.
Within this crusty material, plaque, you can see fibers, folks. You can see other things. And if we were to magnify this by what... 60 power, 100 power, Jan?
We'd
see a lot more.
Yeah, we would. And as a matter of fact, after I saw these, I looked up the nano embossing, and sure enough, there is such a thing. So there you go. It seems surreal, like how could that possibly happen? But there are actual scientific things that make those happen.
All right, just amazing. Okay, next, cluster of golden tubes. Where did this one come from?
Yeah, this was a good while ago that this came out, but that one, I think that also came from the hip. The hip has been the area that's been open hole the longest.
How big of a lesion is it?
My hip.
Couple inches across.
About 20 inches.
20.
From the top of my very top of my hip now all the way down to. Yeah, all the way down to the top of my leg, so about 20 inches. And then width-wise, probably about 10 inches.
This is huge.
They're huge. The areas that I have are huge. And
Do you get the idea that these objects, these items, are being somehow pushed out of the body? Are they just circulating and you happen to catch them? Are they trying
growing.
To leave?
That's, I think they're growing in me. The tubes and things that I get out of me, I mean, they're long tubes that are like a straw, like the size of a straw. If you can imagine how bad a splinter hurts in you, can you imagine how bad it hurts to have something the size of a straw growing
no.
through your skin?
No, no.
Well,
how big is this cluster of golden tubes?
That was about, I have to keep getting my measuring thing here.
I mean, this is easily
that probably,
viewable.
That was at least 2 centimeters.
Okay, easy to see. Very easy to see. This is close to an inch.
Yeah.
Okay.
Big. And if you look at the other side, you don't have that many pictures to look at here, but if you look at the end of it, if you turned it on its side and looked at the end, you'd see that they are tubes. They're hollow tubes.
I see that.
Yeah.
For what? What are they doing?
I don't know. I don't know if these things are my body is producing them or they're being inserted. I know that at one time I had something that looked like a chip come out of my head. I had these deep holes in my head, and I took that with me to see Dr. William Harvey. I don't know if you ever heard of him or not, but he was the head of NASA's medical team at one time. He's passed away last year.
And he said,
but I took that sample with me to see him, and they told me they lost it.
Oh, of course.
But I don't know how these things get in me, or if my body forms them, or
maybe
what.
There's some instructional data in your body to have your body use all the minerals and other elements in it to create these things. That's
it's
a possibility
possible.
Too.
My body is depleted. My iron. I'm extremely anemic, and I'm very much depleted as a human being. So my body mm-hmm. puts a lot of effort into all mm-hmm. of this creation, I guess.
All right, yarn-like fiber, 1 inch long, taken out of lesion. Now, somebody could say, well, that's a piece of cotton from a fabric.
No, I have, you know, where other people may have these fibers that they say are like the size of an eyelash, or they're little fibers they have to look at under the microscope.
Uh-huh.
My fibers are the size of knitting yarn.
This is,
I have different color ones, yellow, blue. Green.
How many samples have you gotten now out of your body that you have stored away?
I had probably 500, but I started throwing them away. I don't keep that many of them now. I've kept some of the fiber balls, different color fiber balls. The ones that are one of a kind, like those nanospheres,
mm-hmm.
you know, I hang on to those things, the gold tubes, that was one of a kind. I've had things came out that look like glitter, like gold glitter, that were all like tinsel.
Do you pull these things out? Do you sometimes pull them out from deep within? Can you feel it coming out?
Yes, I do, because they feel horrible and you have to.
That's one thing all Morgellons patients have indicated on this program is that every time they pull something out of their body, they feel a little bit of relief.
You do. It's like a pressure. If you've ever had a cyst or a boil or anything like that, and you feel that horrible pressure, like you want somebody so badly to relieve it, there is this terrible pressure. I guess when your body recognizes it finally that it's there and it wants it out, but it can't force it out because it's too big.
Yes.
It has to have help getting out. Once you get it out, then it can heal and then it will stop hurting. But yes, it's. Yeah, this string-like thing is, these fibers are always roped. They're always like they've been
tied,
braided them together.
Yeah, looped, tied.
Yes.
Yeah, like a slip knot almost.
Yes,
very
and they're
odd.
Knotted and so forth, and I'm not really sure what the purpose is and all that, but it certainly holds itself in your body very well. It does not want to be taken out.
Now, that's another thing we've talked about for so many years. These things actually will withdraw and pull away from you, almost as if they know you're coming after them in some cases. Now, has that been your experience too?
Yes, I think there definitely is a quorum sensing ability to all of this. And if something is in one area and you go to work on it and try to get it out, another area will start bothering you and trying to distract you from the other area. I definitely think there is some communication that goes on in it.
Like a collective consciousness,
like
between all of these different kinds of things. Well, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like
Jeff, can I ask Elizabeth a question?
Please.
Elizabeth, this is Cliff.
Hi.
It's great to have you on the show here. Listen, I wanted to ask you real quickly, have you pulled any of these large macro fibers out that moved, that were moving and continued to move after you removed them?
You know, I had all kinds of fibers that were moving on my body, moving around, dancing. It used to be that my hair, when I had hair, would dance on top of my head. Literally would stand
right
up and dance
right
around.
Now that's when a Morgellons fiber actually takes over, supplants, kicks out the hair follicle and the hair and becomes the hair.
Yeah.
Or at least takes control of the hair. And so you're saying your hair would move, would it move in unison? Did you feel some kind of a rhythm with it? Or was it random?
I couldn't say that it moved in unison. When it was doing that, it was back before I really had a good grasp of what all of this was. And I had in my bathroom, I had the light that was in my bathroom was also like a heat type lamp. And I would always have that light on standing in front of the big mirror, you know, getting myself ready and so forth. And that is when I was standing there one day and I'm looking in the mirror and I'm seeing this hair just standing straight up and just dancing all around. And that's when I noticed it. So I think it was mainly reacting to the heat.
When you say dancing all around, Elizabeth, help me out a little bit here. Was it like really moving side to side? You could see movement?
Oh, yes. I'm talking dancing. Yes.
Oh.
And I used to have them on my fingers. I had so many fibers. I just have had a terrible time with it all the way through. And I could look at my hands and see fibers on my hands, and they would be moving. You know, same thing, moving around.
How many years have you been dealing with this now?
I had my first bout with it back in around 1992 after my cancer treatment, and I broke out in sores on my legs and my arms, and they were sores that looked like somebody put a cigarette out in your skin, and it had a yellow, like an amber coating over the top.
Yes, I understand.
And at that time, I knew nothing about any of this. And, of course, I was very anemic and from having done chemo, radiation, and all that. And
yeah.
So we just thought, you know, that it had something to do with all of that I had been through. But it turns out that was the first, that was the beginning of this.
Since you mentioned cancer again, and not just cancer, but if you folks have immune compromised conditions of health, and I won't go any further, you know what I'm talking about, I would urge you all to explore and consider carnivora.com. The testimonials we're getting are truly amazing. This is an extract from a subspecies of the Venus flytrap, and it seems to have the ability to find abnormal cells in the body and do away with them. Yeah, stop right there. All right, next photo. We have about 6 minutes left. Embryonic-shaped tissue from lesions. That does look embryonic, although it may be just a coincidence.
No, there are repeating forms that I see in this all the time.
You mean you've seen similar to that?
Yeah.
That looks like a torso.
Not in this green color. It's the only one I've had that's been green.
But it looks like a torso with arms and a head.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. There are lots of
Have you had this, any of these samples taken to someone with a microscope who could do dissections or at least sectioning them somehow, probing them?
I have tried and tried and tried to get people to do that. I have looked for people who would be willing to be real researchers who would look for this.
And what happens?
No one would ever do it. No one would ever follow through. I had someone who told me they were going to do that, and they took my samples. In fact, the ones that we're going to get to later on, the hexagons, they took my samples and they destroyed the hexagons, basically, which I'm very upset about that. But I thought that person was going to take and at least make some really close, in-depth photos.
How discouraging.
They let me down on that. But I hadn't been able to find anybody. Right now, there are some people who have some samples of mine who are supposed to be researching them, supposed to be actual scientific background people.
Right.
So hopefully they're legitimate
All right. Well, keep us posted.
Back from
yeah.
That.
All right. If you're always welcome here, if you get anything back, we'll share it.
Yeah.
Okay. Next up, we have to hurry. Tube-shaped formation from your lesion.
Yeah. This is just a sample of how those tubes are inside the body. They're that long tubes, and things grow inside of those tubes.
So we're looking at the end of a tube.
You're looking at the end of a tube.
Okay, I see it.
Yep. And those tubes are big. Like I said, the...
And they're packed with stuff.
They're usually packed inside with stuff, yeah.
Cliff, real quick, why can't we get somebody with a laboratory? Is it because they understand basically that there may be great danger in this and they don't want to contaminate their lab? Is that the problem?
This seems to be happening all the time, and going way back many years now, every time something's gone to the lab, it's either mysteriously disappeared, been destroyed. I believe Jan's had that happen to her, too. Work done in some of the schools and some of the universities never seems to go anywhere. There's just this this Bermuda Triangle that everything goes into.
Well, Jan, I remember when you sent some samples away, and, well, anyway...
It's funny because I sent them to the same person that Darlene did, Dr. Harvey.
Yeah.
They didn't come back. You know, I also on your website a while ago, you had stories about dead microbiologists. Well, I'm thinking that that's got a lot to do with this.
Yeah. Hey, Jeff, I can tell you, I can try to tell you this real fast. I had a doctor who was a head of oncology in another state who had seen my photographs. And he felt really bad for me, and he said he was familiar with what I was talking about and that he would like so much to help me because he could see how much I was suffering. And he had me to send him a lot of photos. I've got about 300,000 photos of stuff. And I sent him a bunch of it, and he said, you know what? He said, I recognize a lot of what's here in this tissue. He said, I can tell you a lot of what's going on here. He talked to me some about the chemo drugs I've taken. And then he said, you know, he got back to me later, and he said, I want to see, is it okay if I share this with my colleagues? Because they had a research hospital there.
Mm-hmm.
I said, yes, by all means, please have them, you know, take a look at this. And if he said, and if we want to have samples sent to us, would you send them? I said, I would be glad to. I would love that. So anyway, he gets back to me again, and he says, well, I'm got to go before the board here to see if they'll allow us to take the samples. I didn't hear anything back from him. He was, like, so gung-ho helping me. And then this is what happens with all these doctors that seem to want to help. They just drop off the face of the earth. They don't call you back. They don't return your email. They're gone.
Somebody gets to them, sounds like, one way or the other.
Like
everything's
it.
Monitored, so it's not hard. Yeah. Okay. Morgellons tissue, shoulder, and arm. This is your shoulder and arm.
Yeah, that's my shoulder and arm, yeah.
All right, now, folks, I want you please to look at this and understand that these are lesions. These are open. They're gooey. They have those plaques forming. It's not a scab. We'll call it a translucent scab-like effort. And in those things are fibers. This never goes away. It doesn't heal. And this is what's on your upper leg as well, on your hip.
Yeah, except for a lot deeper. There are deeper holes in the hip.
I don't know. I just don't understand how you do it.
Yeah, it's hard.
I know it's hard.
It's hard, and it takes everything financially you can to take care of this stuff, too.
Oh, it's a killer. Financially, it'll destroy people. Large hexagon later reveals smaller hexagon growing on its surface.
Yes.
From your hip.
Yes.
Looking every bit as red at that. You saw it in there. You see the green. You see the different colors. They're just right there.
Yes. And this is large. I mean, most hexagons are real, real tiny. But this hexagon, Jan can tell you how big this is because she actually photographed this one for me. Jan, how big?
Yeah, I would say that the large one was almost half an inch. And then the small one was quite a bit smaller.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But when she got it and she went to photograph it, because at that time I didn't have a microscope camera, she looked at it and she said, oh, my God, there was another one growing on top of the other one. Pretty fascinating.
It is fascinating. It ought to provoke the interest of scientists all over the world to look at this and try to take it apart and see what's in it, what makes it tick. Look at the geometry on that. Look at the interior lines.
And you know, this particular sample, which when I looked at it the other day, I looked at it because I had loaned it out to that person who messed it up, and I went to look at it, and that's when I saw what had happened to it. But there is actual light pulses that go across this. There are lines in it on the backside, and
yes,
when you look at them underneath the microscope, it's sending out signals. It's signaling back and forth across like a
You actually see light moving down those horizontal lines.
Yes, I see light signals moving across it, yes.
Okay, we're out of time. Elizabeth, thank you very much
for
being here.
Thank you for having me on.
Well, thank you for your courage and your willingness to come forward and discuss the most astonishing thing I have ever seen, the human body host, harbor, or be influenced by. It's just amazing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. We're out of time. What I'm going to do, Jan, is ask you and Cliff to please come back, and we'll look at Jan's photos. They're up there if you want to take a look at Jan's photos. It says delusional parasitosis. Well, you look at it, and you decide if you think it's delusional. So, Cliff, thank you, my friend. We'll get you booked here in the next week or two. As soon as I can get the time block set aside, we'll have Larry come back, and you'll come back. And thank you again
Absolutely.
For everything.
Wonderful show tonight. Wonderful show.
Okay, thank you. And, Jan, you be well as you can be, and I don't know where we'd be without all of the work you've done. You were the pioneer in taking photos and putting the material up and making it available to the world to look at.
Well, Jeff, I right back at you, because without you having the contribution that you've made to Morgellon, nobody would ever hear of it. You're the biggest supporter that we have, so thank you.
Well, I'm honored, and I'll talk to you soon, Jan.
Thanks.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Good night. Okay, there's 2 hours for you. We'll be right back with hour 3 in just a few minutes.